sense of understanding that our circumstances don't define who we are is what makes us limitless inherently within. And so it's a way of being, it's a way of understanding that we are more than the circumstances we carry.
Welcome, you wonderful, purposeful, and beautiful humans to Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins. Hope Still Wins is a place where we get to know thought leaders from diverse backgrounds and differing worldviews to help us feel less alone, more connected, and move us to become a better world together. Each week, I'll be interviewing inspiring and relatable guests in attempts to get to know their hearts, celebrate their stories, and explore the concept of hope to hear how and if it has played a role in their lives. Ultimately, answering the question, does hope still win? If so, why? And if not, why not? This week, I have the honor of sitting down with Paralympic gold medalist and world champion swimmer, Mallory Wegeman. You can watch her, yes, you listening can watch her starting August 24th on television as she competes in the Paralympics. In this conversation, Mallory shares how a routine medical procedure left her paralyzed from her waist down, her resilient journey back to the pool, and how we get to choose if life circumstances will define us or limit us, a concept she further explores in her new book, Limitless, The Power of Hope and Resilience to Overcome Circumstances, which is out right now. Mallory's story is a gift to help us redefine the word limitation and the world's limitations on us. And I'm excited for you to dig into it with us today in today's episode. So without further ado, here is my conversation with the Mallory Wegeman. Congratulations, Mallory. Thank you for joining Hope Still Wins. But as this airs today, few weeks before the start of the Olympics, but we are congratulating you because it's official. You're going to Tokyo, and as this airs, it's starting.
It is, and it's so crazy. First of all, thanks for having me, and hearing people say congratulations, I still think is a little surreal. This is games number three for me, and you would think eventually you just kind of get used to that feeling of hearing your name called as a member of Team USA, but you don't. It's just as exciting the third time as it was the first time. I think in many ways, it's actually more exciting because as you get older, there's a lot more obstacles, I think, in your path to keep that dream going, right? And so I'm so excited, and I'm excited that as listeners are hearing this, that we are officially starting opening ceremonies for the what are called the 2020 Paralympic Games, but as we all know, are happening in 2021 due to the postponement.
It is such an accomplishment. And to have it be your third games is something absolutely incredible. And maybe that's where a good place to start here. Because as you enter into this, these games, not saying this is your last by any means, you could have many more in front of you, but every one of them, you know, at this point probably is closer to the last than maybe the first. As it's your third, maybe you will make it to 6-7 games. We don't know yet. But is there a different perspective that you're taking into it now compared to your first games, or a different piece of gratitude?
You know, there's a lot of different elements that come to play. And I always say, like, the journey from 2008 to 2012, which was my first games, was marked by being paralyzed in 2008 to then going on and making the 2012 games. And then the 2012 to 2016 journey, I feel like, was marked by another serious injury and just that fight to prove that dreams are resilience and that we can fight through any obstacle to get to that end goal if we choose to show up every day. And this journey has been about that understanding that what I'm doing is about something so much larger than myself. And I think that that's really remarkable. And I think that at this stage in my career, there's a lot that's put into perspective. You know, we're coming into these games a year later than anticipated due to the postponement. I thought originally at this point in my life, I'd be starting my journey to be a mom, not getting ready for my third Paralympic Games. But I do look forward to many more games after this. And so I think there's just that natural evolution as we grow as individuals. And what I love about that process is I have the luxury of bringing that into my athletic career. And because of that, I am a better athlete. I'm physically stronger than I've ever been, but I'm also mentally and emotionally stronger and more grounded. And these will be my first games married. This is my first time going with, you know, my husband there, even though he won't physically be there due to the foreign spectator policy that they've put in place. But he's with me. And, you know, we were engaged in Rio, but these past 5 years have been a journey the two of us have consciously chose to embark on. And so I think that these games, I appreciate the perspective of understanding that A, every time I go into a race or training for that matter, I get to. It's an opportunity. I don't have to. I get to show up to the pool every day and fight for this. I get behind those starting blocks. And that's such an important perspective, I think, for all things in life, because every day is an opportunity and it's a chance to make something out of it. And so that's kind of how I approach my swimming at this point. And then understanding that, you know, hopefully I do what it is I'm trying to do at these games and I reach the top of the Paralympic podium again. And in doing that, knowing that that moment is about something so much larger than myself. And there's a lot of pride and honor that comes with that.
When you say you get to, what's behind the get to? What is motivating you to even be able to say, I get to do this? And then maybe if we can, you know, for anybody out there listening, what is the communication to them in their get to moments? Like, what kind of things can they find to motivate them?
Yeah. For me, I've gone through a number of circumstances that have put that into perspective. You know, being paralyzed at the age of 18 and walking into a clinic and just simply never walking out was not something I anticipated in my lifetime. And in that moment, I realized that the biggest things that I yearned for after my injury, it wasn't the actual act of walking. It was feeling my toes between the sand. It was those little simple things that you really don't think about in the moment, but when they're gone, they're the biggest things that you yearn for. And so that changed my perspective at a very early age. And then you go into my arm injury in 2014, and I was taken out of the pool for a solid 6 months and competition for a year. And I thought I was going to have to start considering retirement. And then when I was able to return to the sport, I realized like this thing that I love that has built me into who I am, that I turn to grieve my paralysis and build a life, it can be taken away. It can vanish out of my life. And it's an opportunity. And so then you fast forward after Rio, and I was out again for 2 more years doing surgeries and navigating through various different things. And I think each time you hit one of those obstacles and you find the strength and courage to move through them, you get to the other side with a gained perspective. And I would say that's true for all of us, especially this past year. I mean, how many of us are sitting here today and our lives are different here in 2021 than we anticipated they would have been a year ago in what we were hoping for our future to be? Because circumstance changes unbeknownst to us and completely out of our control, but through that we gain a new perspective. And if we lean into that, we actually move forward into who we're supposed to be rather than stay tethered to where we once were. And I think that for me, that's where that get to mentality has really shifted, of realizing that life is precious. Things can change, things can happen, circumstances can intervene. And so each day is an opportunity and each moment is an opportunity. And so make the most of it. And that perspective of mindset and saying, I get to do this today. Not like, oh gosh, I got to get out of bed. I have to do this. It just completely shifts how we approach our day. And it's as simple as just changing the way we speak.
If we can, let's go back to 2008 when you did walk into a clinic and that moment changed your life forever. And then I would love to sit for a second in the season. I don't know how, I mean, I guess how long did it take for you to go, I want to start training for the Paralympic Games? How long did that take you from 2008 to the decision?
You know, it's interesting because, so 2008 was a challenging year. I think that goes without saying at this point. I walked in on January 21st. It was Martin Luther King Jr. Day. I had the day off from class, and I was just supposed to be getting a simple, you know, outpatient procedure. I was getting an epidural injection for back pain. And I didn't walk out that day, and I was left paralyzed. It was 2 months before my 19th birthday, and I just felt consumed with all of those questions we yearned for, the answers we yearned for when we're going through the depths of trauma. You know, what if? What if I would have gone to back to bed that morning and didn't get up? Why me? You know, like wondering all of those things that naturally we kind of go to. And fortunately for me, I found my way back to the pool very soon after my injury. I had been a lifelong competitive swimmer since the age of 7. And 2.5 months after my paralysis on April 8th of 2008, I got back in the water for the first time. And getting back in, I didn't think, oh, I'm going to go to the Paralympic Games. I mean, I had just been exposed to the Paralympic movement literally 48 hours prior. I didn't even know that world existed. And I got in the water because I was just looking for a place to go, a place to heal, a place to grieve, a place to process. And the black line that trails the bottom of the pool, that's my sanctuary. It's what I've turned to my entire life. And for me in that moment, it was the one constant. It felt like the one thing that hadn't changed, and I could go there and everything felt the same. And so sure, swimming was a little different, and I used just all upper body strength rather than kicking, and my body felt a little bit different in the water. But when I was face down over that black line, I could just be, and that was my place I could go. And so when I got back in the water, I started swimming every day. And before I knew it, I was swimming in a local club meet with a bunch of little 8 and 9 year old age group swimmers, and they were all beating me, but it didn't matter because I was doing something that I loved, and I was proving that I could bridge my life before paralysis with my life after, and it didn't have to be segregated into these two eras of my life, if you will. And so in that process, I started allowing myself to dream. And, you know, I would make comments of like, what if I could make it to Paralympic trials? Because that was my exposure point. The Beijing trials were here in Minnesota at the U of M. And I went as a spectator just after getting out of the hospital. And so I would make those comments, but I wasn't training for the Paralympics by any stretch of the imagination. And I don't think I truly was until I made our national team in March of 2009. So a year later, when I made the US national team, I realized like, wow, we've got a chance at this. Something cool could be happening right now. And I started really honing in on some of those goals.
And one of the best champions that we've ever seen now. And your story is one that, in my very naive opinion, I would have said, oh yeah, you have to segregate it into two separate lives. But you just talked about bridging the gap in between the two. And now you sit here, we get to talk. You've been a part of some incredible projects, including your book and including speaking engagements and competition. I mean, your life is full of activity and opportunity and wonder. Does it feel like you've bridged the gap? Does it feel like two separate lives? Would you have it this way? Like, with whatever your answer is, do you prefer it the way it is now, or do you wish you would have done it different?
There's so many things that you could unpack from that question. And I think that's such a great conversation. And, you know, I think a lot of that wanting to bridge the gap was part of the healing process of understanding that I didn't need to move on from being paralyzed. In fact, moving on isn't obtainable because the circumstances we go through will forever become a part of who we are. And so you can't just move on from it. You can move forward with it, but not move on from. And I think that for me, that act of understanding that I'm moving forward with it was a big part of allowing the identity of who I was before my injury to stay a part of my identity as to who I was post-injury. And my injury didn't change who I am. It heightened things. It forced me to lean into my inner strength and find my resilience. It forced me to lean on my faith in different ways. It forced me to find my voice and confidence in ways that I never had to before. But it didn't change who I am. And I think that now, as I've built into where I'm at today, you know, the things that are in my life now, when I was injured at 18, I never in a million years thought would be a part of my life. I didn't know if I would get married. I didn't know what relationships would look like. I didn't know if I'd be in a position to dream of having a family. I didn't know what my career would look like. And now here I am, almost 5 years married, dreaming of a family. And I'm the co-CEO of a social impact agency and production studio. I'm an executive producer on documentary work. I am an author. I'm a speaker. I'm an athlete. I'm an advocate. Like, that list goes on. But I'm also a wife and a dog mom and a daughter and a sister and a friend and all those other identities. And I'm proud of all of that. And I think at this stage, 13 years in, not only would I not have it any other way, but I wouldn't change January 21st, 2008, because it's a part of the fabric of who I am now. It's built me into the woman I am, and some of the most beautiful things in my life I wouldn't have if it weren't for that experience and those circumstances.
I wonder if, I mean, for me, I sit here and I think of the seasons of life that I would identify in my own life that would have been the toughest. I was sitting here as you said that, and I was like, I wonder if that's comforting for me, or if, I wonder if that's comforting for somebody to listen to who's in it. Like, maybe they've just been diagnosed. Maybe they've just had a traumatic injury. Maybe they're in it right now where it feels new and it feels confusing and disorienting and it feels like everything's being ripped away. To hear you say that you don't know if you would change it or you wouldn't change it, I wonder if that just gives a peace. It gives me a peace to know that, like, as I feel like I'm in the desert, you know, there is something on the other side. For the notes for the podcast, I had limitations written in there a lot. And I don't know if limitations now make sense in this context. Can you explain how wrong or right I am to use the word limitations when it comes to a disability of any kind? And then also what word maybe you would use differently and how you've worked through the things that have changed completely over the last, you know, 10 years.
Yeah. You know, I don't think there's wrong or right in that. I think it's just, I always say this, and I leaned on this actually a lot, and I love that limitations is written down because my book is literally titled Limitless. And I talked about this through the writing process a lot with the team that I worked with, and the idea that our words matter and the way we use them matters. And so it's not necessarily the word itself that carries the weight, but the way in which we structure the words around it. So I say, you know, as a woman living with a spinal cord injury, I live with a spinal cord injury. I didn't suffer a spinal cord injury, or I don't suffer from a spinal cord injury. There's a difference between suffering from a spinal cord injury and living with one. And it puts the power in the person when you say you live with it. You know, my grandfather had a long battle with cancer, and it was something that he lived with. And he still lived despite living with cancer, right? He didn't suffer every day because of it. And I think that's such a, again, perspective and mindset. So when it comes to limitations, you know, yes, there are certain restrictions. There certainly are. I cannot stand up and place one foot in front of the other and walk. But I also have learned how to adapt. If I absolutely need to, I can still get my high knee up a flight of stairs and I crawl up them thanks to my upper body strength. And basically anything that I want to do in this life, I can adapt and pivot and find new ways to do. I think the biggest struggle living with a disability is living in society. Society isn't always built for us. And that can be really challenging, and not just physically speaking, but even mentally in terms of how society perceives disability, right? We often see if it's a visible disability, we see the disability before the person. I can't tell you how many times I get, quote unquote, like stared at, but I'm not getting stared at. My wheelchair is getting stared at. And it's like, I'm just getting looked right past and they're seeing the four wheels beneath me. And that's tough. And that's something that I really hope that through my swimming and through sharing my story in Limitless, through being a speaker, through my husband and I do in our projects with our production company, that we can start changing that narrative. We can start changing perception, because there's so much possibility that exists. And I think that, well, you know, I can't put one foot in front of the other. I would argue that I have strengths that other people may not have because of those circumstances, versus I think sometimes we look at disability as implying that somebody is physically incapable of doing things. And that's just not true. I mean, that was my favorite part about breaking my first world record. I was like, all right, now I get to flip the conversation of disability upside down on its head and be like, well, if I'm physically incapable of doing things, how did I just break a world record, right? So I don't think limitations is a bad word, because we all, to some extent, have things that can limit us. But what I would argue is we get a choice in if they actually do, right? When I was going through titling Limitless, the idea of it wasn't like this cutesy fluff statement. It was understanding that every single one of us carries circumstances. But that sense of understanding that our circumstances don't define who we are is what makes us limitless inherently within. And so it's a way of being, it's a way of understanding that we are more than the circumstances we carry, and that our now does not define what's to come.
This week's episode of Hope Still Wins is brought to you by Generous International. Generous International is a company that I co-founded. Generous donates 100% of profits to nonprofits fighting human-facing injustice. So every bag of coffee bought, every cup of coffee drank is going back to make the world a better place. Generous is best known for selling coffee, specialty grade coffee. So it's some of the best coffee in the world. You're going to drink coffee anyways, and like we like to say, why not make it life-changing coffee? Well, you can visit Generous at generouscoffee.com. Please go out today and check out Generous Coffee. It's there's a place in Denver, Colorado. I live in Denver, called Brewability. And Brewability only hires men and women who have either a physical or mental disability. And I wish I remember, their t-shirts have the craziest cool slogan on it. It's like, don't diss my ability. Or don't diss my ability, because it's like disability. Yeah, anyways, it's awesome. But the cool thing, one of my buddies works there, one of my best friends, Avery, and he has an invisible disease, an internal disease, and I get to write about him in my book. And one of the things that I've seen, and I'll speak for him a little bit here, is like for years he was struggling with this internal disease that did not allow him to be maybe in public because of his immune system, or forced him to be in the hospital for a year of his life. And as a result, he missed so much high school, missed so many friendships, missed so much community, that it kind of spit him out in a place of isolation. Even if he didn't want it to be, he was just like, I haven't had any exposure in my life. Like, I haven't been able to do and be. And what this what Brewability has done is, as they've hired all these kids, young adults as well, into work, all of a sudden, I think maybe for the first time, or at least I get to hear it from Avery, is like they're seeing that their limitations aren't limitations that keep them from being great. They just needed a community around them and people around them to show them that there is a place where not only they belong, but they can thrive and they can create and they can invest and cultivate. And I want to do two things with this. One is thank you for doing that, because I think that's what you're doing with your work. And I think when you set your world record and when you write your book and when you speak, people are listening and going, hey, wait, maybe for the first time in my life, I realize I am great. Like, I can do. The second part of that is any advice for anybody out there who's in it on how they can see just how much potential they have. You talk about the idea of potential, and I want to hear like how they can cultivate and exude and push forward with the potential that they have.
Yeah, I love that story. And I also think Brewability, how cool is that? So next time I'm in Denver, I'm definitely checking that out.
It's a great place.
That's remarkable. And we need more of that, because you're right. It is about cultivating. It's about community. And I mean, goodness, we are such a reflection of the people we surround ourselves with. And I say that in anything and everything I do, I mean, down to being named my third Paralympic team. I quite literally wouldn't have been doing that if it weren't for the people in my corner, if it wasn't for my coach and my trainer and my husband. Oh my goodness, my husband is such a saint in being on this journey with me and chasing these fierce athletic dreams, but also just doing life. And, you know, I think the biggest thing that I would say in that is, for me personally, finding that ability to believe in the greatness I have within, right? It came down to allowing myself to stop taking on other people's perceptions of what my worth was. And early in my injury, and even over the years, that was a really big struggle for me. I had an onslaught of opinions of what I was capable of doing, what I should be doing, what I shouldn't be doing, what my life will look like. And living with a disability can be really challenging in that. Living with any set of circumstances that are different can be challenging. And I think that in that, I learned something that I think is so important for all of us, regardless of our circumstances, to understand that other people's perceptions of your worth is not indicative of what your actual worth is. It's just highlighting their own insecurities, ignorances, and unconscious bias. And so we have to find a place to let go of that and not allow other people's warped perceptions of what we should be doing at this stage in our life, or what we can or can't do, or what goals are too ambitious and what limits we should live by, be weights that constrain us, because then we're allowing other people to dictate our own destiny versus giving ourselves the power to realize, okay, sure, maybe I can't. I mean, prime example, year after my injury, I had a woman in a grocery store. I was playing peekaboo with her daughter and in the shopping cart because they were in the line in front of me at the checkout. And she looked at me and said, "Oh, I'm so sorry, honey." And I was like, "Why?" And she said, "Well, that you can't have children." And I was like, I mean, I was 19, a year into my paralysis. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Well, sure I can. There's a lot of ways to have a family." And she was like, "Well, but no, sweetie, what type of mother could you really be?" Mm. And I was like, wow, like in the middle of a grocery store. And I think those are those examples of, we have to find the inner strength to not, that can hurt, but to not allow that to get into our psyche and into our headspace and start telling us that we're not capable of being a mother, or we're not capable of whatever that example could lead us to. And so anybody who's in it, whether it's navigating, going through, you know, adjusting to a new life circumstance, whether it's battling illness, whether it's going through a breakup, whether it's whatever stage that is, just understanding that you get a say in this, and you can't let other people's perceptions dictate what is possible in your life.
It's a lesson I'm learning right now, as I'm sure in the Twitter world that everybody's engaging in. We're all learning.
That's the beauty. We should always be learning. Gosh. Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be nice? You have a quote that I read that I think is beautiful, and I'd love for you to expound on it. The quote is, "It's not the moments that define us." And I think this goes perfectly with what we're just talking about, but how we respond to them. The word that stands out to me here in this is respond. And so if you can, how do we healthily respond? You talk about not letting it get into our psyche, not letting it sink in, hearing it, processing it, but then not holding on to it. How do we do that well?
That takes time. Man, talk about always learning. I also think the biggest part of that quote is as I've sat back and thought on that one for a number of years, is this idea of responding versus reacting. And, you know, when you go through these moments, well, it seems that all control is lost. There is still pieces of control we have, right? So I'm going to go back to my paralysis, because that's where this quote really stemmed from, as I navigated through that time and understanding that I had no control over January 21st, 2008. I had no control over what happened in the room that day. I had no control over the moments that followed. And that was really challenging. It left me extremely angry. It left me feeling every emotion you could feel, a lot of the very unhealthy ones. And I really struggled with that. And I had to find a way to take control back so I could start piecing things together and move forward. And a lot of that came in understanding that while I couldn't control the specific circumstances, I could control how I woke up each day. I could control if I laid in bed and allowed myself to stay lost in grief, or if I got dressed and got into my wheelchair and tried to tackle at least one thing that day. I could control who I chose to be through that process. I could stay angry and bitter and frankly, just hate on the world around me. Or I could find ways to allow that circumstance to challenge me to be better in how I show up for others in my life and how I show up for myself. And so I think there's a lot of understanding that, again, we can't control those circumstances. I can't control the fact that I was paralyzed at 18. We can't always control if we lose our job or the race we are born with or the socioeconomic status we grow up with, or if we go through a horrific breakup or whatever that thing might be. But we do get to choose how we show up for ourselves and those around us each day after. And I think that those responses, those are ultimately what define us. You know, I mean, we started before we hit record and I said to you, I loved following you on your journey. And, you know, frankly, like now at this stage in 2021, I don't think of Ben Higgins as, you know, the guy that was part of The Bachelor. It's like, wow, look at everything he's doing. His book that came out, like what he's doing with his career, his podcast, like you think of all of those things. And while those circumstances are a part of who we are, they're not our defining factor. The defining factor is how we've chose to respond and who we've chose to be throughout that.
You're really awesome. And I'm very thankful for you for many reasons. The message you share, the way you represent Team USA in the pool, the book, you coming on the podcast. And I have one final question for you that we ask everybody. Mallory, do you believe that hope still wins? If so, why? And if not, why not?
I would say, yes, I believe hope still wins. And why? You know, at the end of the day, we first have to hope. When we're in a dark place, when we find ourselves navigating through, when we've gone through that moment where everything changes and we feel kind of lost, we have to just find the courage to hope for something better than what we currently are in. To hope for something in the future. And when we do that, then eventually that hope transitions into a belief. And then that belief kind of turns into our present reality. And then we get to be in a place where we're finally out of the depths and we can find that gratitude. Because when you're in the depths, it's really hard to find gratitude. It's really challenging. Sure, you can push yourself each day to say, okay, what are three simple things that I'm thankful for? It could be the fact that it's sunny today. It could be the fact that my dog gave me a kiss, whatever it is. But I think that in order to get through and navigate through, we first have to find the courage to hope. And from that point, everything continues to build. I would say, yes, hope still wins.
Mallory, you're incredible. If you're out there listening and you want to check out Mallory's work, please go and wherever you can buy books. March 2nd, 2021, Mallory released Limitless. Also, cheer her on in August when she goes to Tokyo to jump back into the pool for the third time representing Team USA. She's also the co-CEO of a couple different companies, up to a lot, sits on boards, just makes this world go round in so many ways. Mallory, thank you for joining Hope Still Wins.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning into today's episode of Hope Still Wins. If you haven't already, please subscribe or follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed this conversation, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple.
and join the community over on Instagram at Hope Still Wins. Also, if you feel up for it, passing this on to a few friends isn't a terrible idea. Well, that's it for today, my friends. Do not forget to tune in and watch Mallory compete in Tokyo Paralympic Games starting August 24th. And Mallory will be cheering you on the whole time. Thank you again for listening to today's episode of Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins, and we're going to chat next week.